Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is September the 19th, and this is Strat Chat, episode 6, I believe. We're doing tech today. Hey, what's up, guys?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Explain to us why you don't have a webcam today.
No webcam for me today because I'm recovering from surgery I just had a couple of days ago. Couple herniated discs, some back surgery, some powerful painkillers. I am not physically capable of sitting upright in a chair at the moment.
We forgive you this time.
So no webcam this time, but we're still gonna do the show because passion.
Nice.
All right, so why don't you start us off? Cool. What are we talking about today?
All right, so the topic of the day is tech. So technology, that stuff that Protoss is all about, that stuff that other races need as well, but not as much, you know. Why don't we get into the swing of things by discussing what tech is? So, Chris, what does tech mean to you?
Honestly, when I think about tech, I think about you make an investment into something that will either you get higher priced units, quote unquote better units, or you are investing into something that makes your stuff more specialized or just better in general. So for instance, things like Stim is good. Things like Blue Flame Hellion, things like Psystorm, pretty obvious stuff.
So I heard words like better investment, improvement, and more expensive. Teo, what is it? What does tech mean to you?
Yeah, that sums it up. It's something that improves how effective your combat units are, either by being a different, stronger unit or by making those same units you already have stronger. That's
Okay.
it, I guess.
I'm gonna look at tech from a different point of view, I think, for a second.
As
Tech to
usual.
me is, as I usually do, because I'm that schmuck. Tech to me is stuff that is locked away at the start of the game intentionally, because it is too strong to have access to immediately, and therefore requires significant resource investment in order to obtain it. Because it would just not be very good if people could start off by making Mutalisk with their first 100 gas and things of that nature.
I don't know, one Mutalisk might not be that bad.
If you're I mean,
Don't give Blizzard any
think of me from
ideas.
don't let's not give let's not give Blizzard ideas. I don't need to have people like the one base Ultralisk rush at like 5 minutes.
One Ultralisk and 10 queens. All you need is queens, man.
Which you
Okay.
can get early on, just saying.
Yeah. So let's harp on that notion of it. Why does the notion of tech exist? Why isn't stuff? So I mentioned it'd be unfair, but why don't we, really discuss why they bother locking stuff, abilities and units away at the start of the game instead of just letting you have it. So go ahead, Chris.
I think I kind of remember like a really old story, like back when I first got into gaming, I played Warcraft 3, and I used to go to a site called warcraftstrategy.com, and people were constantly posting ideas, fantasy heroes and things like that that they would love to be put into the game and things like that. And I remember one time somebody posted one that was like, "Yeah, I want to put in this hero that can fly. Like you can get it like at the very beginning of the game. It can fly, and so it can do all this cool stuff." Everybody's like, "You can't do that. Like you can't introduce a flying unit when literally nothing anybody has attacks like shoots up." So I kind of think of that in terms of it would be unfair for instance, like the Mutalisk type thing. It'd be unfair to get access to a Banshee or something like that right off the bat. Like, if you could build a Banshee, if you could just build a factory and then build a Banshee, or hell, if
Well,
you could just build a Banshee,
it wouldn't
like.
just yeah like tech require like requiring it come out of a specific production structure that isn't available immediately require is tech in and of itself. You have the tech to a starport.
Yeah.
But imagine if the Banshee like came with cloak without the research time investment either. So that you just build a cloak Banshee out of a barracks, right?
Yeah, that would just be way unfair.
That'd be well, it's not just that it would be necessarily unfair, because if every race had all their tech unlocked immediately,
right,
then everyone would have all the tools they need to deal with that. But the so-called like guessing game of scouting that starts off early would be pretty impossible.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, game is guarded. My opponent could be building a carrier right now. Like, what do I what do I do?
Yeah, I think it's more about giving players a sense of progression rather than making things fair. Because as Whitewing said, if you just unlock every tech at the start of the game, it's not unfair anymore. Because if he builds a Banshee, okay, I can build an Observer and a Phoenix or whatever and be ahead. But it, like, locking more powerful units behind tech and forcing you to like invest in other things first gives the sense of progression that you have in RTS, which is pretty much what defines the genre to a certain extent.
Yeah, I'll agree with most of that. I still think there's a small amount of unfairness present, because not every race has the same balance in the way their tools are available, because it's asymmetrical. But it doesn't have to. I'm just suggesting that there'd be a little bit of unfairness. But you're mostly I agree with mostly what you said. Yeah, the center progression is the most important part of it. So yeah, tech. That's pretty much the only reason why tech exists as a notion. If it didn't exist, things would be very hectic and hard to predict.
It'd be like playing against Zerg.
It would be like playing a Total War game, I think, where you just pick the units at the start and then you control them, and that's it. There is no management, and you actually just have to position your stuff or whatever, rather than managing how a strategy develops for a whole game.
Be like that game you play as kids where you take those. Be like those game you play with kids when you pick fictional characters and try to have them fight and figure out who wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The amusing thing is, when you're really terrible and you first start playing with your friends, you pretty much do this, right? Like, everyone goes one base carrier against one base battlecruiser against, I don't know what Zerg is. Like,
I don't know, I was never at that level, so...
Yeah, you were always way higher, of course. Of course.
Chris booted up the game and the first thing he did was four-gate someone.
No, that's me. Actually, my first ladder win ever was a Mothership Rush. Yeah.
That's pretty sick. That's a bright future.
Yeah. Way to start a career.
Man, imagine if you just didn't need tech for that Mothership. You could just build it right at the start. Be like, hey, 400, 400, Mothership. All right, so last week, Teo was not with us, unfortunately, but Chris and I spent a good deal of time discussing the notion of opportunity costs. So, you know, Chris was talking to me about this earlier. He wanted to bring up a notion of specialization of tech. And it's very important to note that a lot of tech in the game specializes the way a unit behaves. Or takes it down a path that or makes the unit, you know, more focused on doing something rather than general. Stimpaks is an example, or combat shields is an example of a tech or research that makes a unit more general. It just makes the Marine better at everything. But cloaking on the Banshee is pretty clearly pretty much just makes it better at harass, right?
Right.
So it specializes the Banshee favorite. I mean, it can make it better at fighting, but typically speaking, in a fight, people usually have detection.
I think the issue is not that it makes it better at harassing, but it makes it more special in the fact that it forces the opponent to now have detection in order to deal with it. That makes sense.
It forces a more specialized response, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'll agree with that. And, like, the Colossus is a very specialized response to large groups of, like, smaller units. You obviously don't build Colossus if your opponent's going, like, heavy Broodlord Ultralisk or something like that.
Wouldn't hurt.
Well, I mean,
yeah, you do
Colossus are kind of good, but
there's never a bad time to build Colossus.
Berserk is going Ultra, this Colossus are terrible. Like, every time I see a Protoss going Colossus against Ultra Ling, I rage so much.
Just get Storm. No, just get Storm Immortal. Just go Storm Immortal Arc on
Storm
instead.
Immortal's game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of tech units are very specialized at doing one thing in particular. A lot of research is specialized. So we have this notion of opportunity cost of teching because tech takes a lot of time, which is the primary prerequisite of it being tech, is that it costs extra resources. It's sort of like a tax for unlocking it. And then a significant amount of time, so it has to be, as Chris mentioned before, an investment. You have to plan for it and want to unlock it in advance. And because you have to cost a lot of time and money to do a tech, while you're doing teching for one thing, you're not teching to something else. So there's sort of this like specialization focus. I think we see it most clearly with Protoss.
Protoss is easier to see.
It's like the easiest to see out of the three races because you pretty much open either Robo, Twilight Council, or Stargate. You're usually not doing both simultaneously, at least for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you are Mothership Core. Woohoo!
you kind of pick one to go down for a little while.
You pick
a tech path to go down for a little while, and you get some essential tech, and then you go and you pick something else to do. In that sense, the sort of this opportunity cost of you pick one thing at a time you need. And if you're doing that, then your tech choices have to be fairly general. One moment, please. I have a phone call.
Hello. All right. Just going to go ahead and talk a little bit more about what he was saying.
Okay.
Really? Really? You have to type all that out?
Yep.
Alright. So, basically the notion of things becoming more specialized as you tech up and forcing more out of your opponent.
I think it's more about forcing a reaction than saying a unit becomes more specialized.
Yeah?
It's better wording.
Okay.
But how do you explain, is Blue Flame Hellion really a difference in how your opponent responds?
No, but it doesn't make the unit more specialized. They just do more damage against light. They just fight better, if that makes any sense.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, isn't that a form of specialization? I mean, it doesn't make them worse at anything else. It's not like a trade-off in the sense that they get worse at other things. But it is sort of a specialization in the sense that you spent a bunch of resources to only get better at one thing.
It's not necessarily to get better at one thing, though, because the plus damage to light makes them stronger against Zerglings in fights, to the point where going Zerglings against mech is terrible, but it also makes them stronger at harassment. So, I don't think it's that correct to say that it's tech specializes units. It can be misinterpreted.
It can be. It depends on what the tech really is. StarCraft 2 doesn't have a lot of tech that it involves trade-offs. Generally, if you research an upgrade, it's just a flat improvement, or a new ability that's just a plain improvement. There are other examples of RTS games in which you could research an upgrade for a unit, which would then permanently decrease the abilities of the unit in some way in exchange for the new upgrade. StarCraft doesn't really have much of that.
Yeah, that's true.
I can only think of MOBA examples right now. I can't think of an RTS upgrade where you're actually trading things off.
Siege mode. There you go. Siege mode is, if we're going back to Wings of Liberty, Siege mode, you're trading off mobility for doing a lot more. all the way back to Brood War.
No, upgrading to a Brood Lord is a trade-off. You lose the ability to attack air.
Brood Lord as well, yes.
Guardian,
if we're going back to the real game that we're talking about.
Yep. So, generally, it's just, it's the primary notion here that's important to pay attention to is the fact that it takes a lot of time to unlock tech. and it costs materials that could have gone into the that could have been invested in additional units. So teching is a long-term play or decision. You're sacrificing power now for power later, and in that way, it's very comparable to economic play. You know,
Yeah,
I could take
I
a I could t
think
I can. Go ahead.
I think it's together with economic investments. Well, tech obviously is what defines what you call a timing, right? Like when your tech completes is when you're at your strongest, so it's when your attack. But with tech in particular, it's the easiest thing to spot for a timing, like when Stim finishes, when Blink finishes, when Plus Two finishes on Protoss, whatever. It pretty much defines to a lot. It pretty much defines a lot of builds and what they do when they attack, when they don't attack, and that kind of thing. So that's the other interesting thing. And it's easier to spot than economy because it's not that intuitive to see when an expansion or when however many extra workers kick in and give you 4 or 5 extra units or whatever. But it is really easy to see when tech is done, which is when the investment it immediately has return in value. I hope I'm
The, you
making
know, when your
sense.
okay.
hydralisk suddenly starts shooting faster or should be further,
Yeah,
or
exactly.
moving faster, or your infestors can suddenly neural parasite those tanks that you were sneaking up on and they couldn't a moment before. That's not a play we see very often, but when it shows up, it's hilarious.
Or stalkers can
It's
blink and kill Zerg and make them angry.
yeah, you know, that's. That is typically how I find that Zergs tend to get angry at Protoss these days, because Soltarians aren't, you know, as common as they used to be.
You know, that's
And
I.
nobody man trains Zerg anymore.
That face.
Actually, I want to talk about the man train for a second. The man train is one of my favorite examples of a really specialized tech build from Protoss to solve a problem. Because it's a tech build that is so sharp in the sense that it picks literally what two things that you absolutely must have for the build to work, and only gets just barely enough gas to do it. And that is, you
Yeah,
build like two immortals in a war prism.
for those that don't know, the man train is a one gas version of the soul train, where you go with two immortals plus one, and you only have one gas, so you only warp in zealots and aim with the Zerg, and that is it. It's a glorious build.
And you just micro and you just micro your warp prism and your immortals around.
Yeah.
And it's a super specialized tech focus in that you just barely get enough gas just to get the two immortals out and get warp gate done, and get your plus one. If you do the plus one variant, you can do a faster version that skips plus one, but gets a mothership core instead.
Actually, in any way, you used
Or
to get both plus one and mothership core.
yeah,
The
I think it was
guide I posted
refined.
had both.
Yeah, I
Oh,
think the
okay.
build was refined a bit after that to not use get both, either get one or the other.
Okay.
It was like the build was really strong because your opponent would not have enough roaches to deal with the fact that, you know, they had a huge waves of zealots wailing on them with the immortal shooting, and the zerglings couldn't get around because you just micro the immortals. It was a very strong, sharp timing that you had to, that was tech reliant. You needed the immortals. Without the immortals, you couldn't deal with roaches because stalkers were just not going to cut it.
Right.
And you wanted you needed the warp prism too, so that because you they couldn't so that you'd have a guaranteed pylon or warp in reinforcements while you're attacking, because the queen wasn't going to be able to kill that quickly enough if you were careful. So there's a lot of different ways you can tech. You can use tech in order to do things. But generally speaking, while an individual upgrade, as we mentioned, isn't usually a specialization of a unit, choosing what tech to op to unlock at what time is sort of a specialized strategy, in the sense that you're choosing to do one thing well, to sacrificing other things that you could have taken it or could have chosen to do instead. Typically, Protoss, when they're playing a macro game, tries to be the most generally specialized, tries to take the most general tech as possible. Like they kind of just want to be prepared for everything because Protoss has the lowest ability. Well, not the lowest, I guess Terran's was even worse, but Protoss can't really tech swap on a dime very quickly. So if they get caught unprepared by something, they're just dead.
Well, I think honestly this may be like
That
going
only
off
applies
on
to
a
PvZ.
this might be going off on a tangent a little bit, but I think that's somewhat a side effect of the fact that Protoss is a little bit too specialized in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, that's yeah, but the suggestion is that they generally their tech choices are tend to be general when they're playing a long game and not trying to all in early.
Right.
Whereas Terran also tends to choose general tech paths, but theirs are a little bit more focused on, I want to say, an army and less on unlocking new units and things of that nature.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, the
I think it's still
massive.
specialized because
Oh,
you still
sorry.
have, like, I mean, if they decide to go mech or bio or whatever, that's still, like, a pretty heavy emphasis on specialization.
Yeah,
Yeah, but
that is true.
the difference between Protoss and Terran is Terran picks a path which is either bio or mech. And then the basic units of bio are Marauders and Marines, the basic units of mech are, I guess you can say, tanks and Hellions. And then anything you tech to complements that. Protoss tends to be the opposite. So you kind of pick your strong tech unit, which is generally AoE, and then whatever you get along with it, which are basic units, complement that. So if you go Colossus, you complement those with Blinkstalkers. If you go Storm, you tend to complement that with Immortals and Zealots. So it works the other way around, which is kind of what people hate about Protoss, or what people have issues with. It's that your basic units are actually more support units, and your tech units are the core thing that defines an army, rather than the other way around, like with Terran.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that notion seems more intuitive to a new player, I guess, but after, it doesn't really become frustrating to anyone until you play with it for a while.
It can be problematic because when you rely so much on tech units, you just naturally end up going for death ball situations. Except very few
Yeah, you got to
exceptions, which
protect it.
is.
You got to protect the units.
Yeah,
Because an
exactly.
expensive unit is an example of tech. I think Chris mentioned this earlier. If I build a carrier, that's a very long investment and a lot of resources to get that unit out. That's a high tech unit. It's a significant commitment of time and resources to in order to bring that thing onto the field. I can't just throw it away.
Yeah, and the thing to point out is that when you go for really expensive units, the first units can be sort of considered more expensive than the latter ones. Because, for example, your first Colossus, you're investing 100 gas in a robot, 200 gas in a support bay, 200 gas in range, and 200 gas in that first Colossus. So when you have, like, the very first Colossus can be thought of as something that costs several hundred gas. Whereas when you go from your, I don't know, your fifth to your sixth Colossus in your massive death ball, it's not that much of a difference.
So you're discussing marginal cost of production versus
Yeah.
including sunken
Yeah, so
costs in the initial.
this is why when you tech to a powerful unit, you end up being way defensive and going for a more death ball style of play, which is what Protoss does. It's because you can't
That's what
afford to move out after you invested 700 gas in a Colossus instead of 200, like you would think you invested.
Yeah, that's what Zerg did in Wings of Liberty too for a long time, is they would get these 13-minute hives and then get the and then rush broodlords out, defend like turtling on like a lot of spine crawlers and infestors until the broodlords were out.
Yeah,
But
I
that's
mean, you could
because.
even back up further and go back to when Zergs were opening up with like two base muta against Terran. That was another side effect of them like waiting a really long time, making sure they had a lot of gas, and then getting.
Zerg still go two base muta against
Yeah, but it's
Terran.
awful now.
Yeah, but it's
Well,
standard. It drives you insane.
Chris and I had that talk a while ago where Chris was defending the build for a long time, and then like
it's terrible. It's just
we
bad
saw a game
now.
play out in which it was literally the optimal situation for the Zerg. I can't remember who that was playing. It was on I want to say it was on King Sejong Station. And the Zerg player rushed two base Mutalisk and caught him doing a Marauder Hellbat all-in, which like should be the ideal situation for two base Muta, right?
And then he
Yeah.
lost anyway.
And the Terran just destroyed him anyway.
It was pretty bad.
I don't know. The thing with two base Muta is it just doesn't go away. Zergs keep pulling it back. So I imagine it has to be decent sometimes. I guess what happens is I don't understand TVZ well enough, but I guess the map control you get earlier on is worth the delayed upgrades. And there's massive differences between how people go two base Muta now, where they still have like an 8-minute third and decent timed upgrades, and how they used to in 2011 when they took their third at 10 minutes and started plus one at 15 or whatever, and then complained about Baya.
Yeah, so that's something else I wanted to mention. The tale brings up the way you get to your final tech state that you're aiming for your timing matters quite a bit.
Yes.
Generally speaking, like you choose a strategy and you say, you know, in the mid game I'm going to have these units, and this is generally what my army is going to look like, so I need to have this tech unlocked at this time. Fine, but the order at which you do it matters quite a bit. It's not just perfectly interchangeable where you can say I can do this first, then this after, and then it doesn't really matter which one comes where. You know, getting warp gate before you get robotics bay is kind of important.
And it's not
just
that. It's also later on in the game. When you look at, for example, all the three base timings Protoss were doing in 2012 against Zerg and even against Terran off Double Forge, those builds were extremely specific in how they chrono boosted their upgrades, when they got their upgrades, exactly when they started their support bay to have 3 Colossi against 4 Colossi against 2 Colossi at the timing. All those things really matter, and they're really actually hard to time properly, and it's something you only see at the pro level. And I guess you can say the same thing with Terrans regarding their medevac and Viking count. I don't understand Terran builds well enough to say that.
Bomber!
To be honest, but I imagine they do something like that. And
Bomber is a great example.
I'm not going to comment.
On the Terran side, of a player who for a long time had a strategy involving delaying tech for more units, Bomber's playstyle for a very long time was just get more Marines out early than anyone else and delay his tech and medevacs a little bit, just so that when they finally came out and it was time to do the push, he just had like maybe 10 to 20 more Marines than the normal push would have. And that was, you know, 10 extra Marines doesn't sound like that much, you know, 10 minutes into the game. But when your opponent is, you know, has a lot of practice defending a push, the most standard version of the push, which has 10 fewer Marines than what he's up against now, those 10 Marines can make a huge difference in whether the push is held or not, or how much damage it does. And that snowballed quite a bit. And it would often turn out being the case that Bomber would just be running people over with streams of units, and no one would really be entirely sure how he had so many units compared to everybody else. But it would really just be a snowball effect of just, you know, switching a timing for tech a little bit just to get a few extra units earlier and delays on upgrade a little bit.
Yeah, another good example of that, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, but is when Marine King came up with the double reactor medevac timings. I can't believe I'm actually praising a Marine King build, but it's happening. The world is about to end. Basically, what was standard for the longest time in PvT was to go with two tech labs for Stim and either concussive shells or combat shield, and one reactor barracks for Marines. Marine King figured out that if you went with two reactors and you made a fuck ton of Marines, you actually ran people over because everyone's builds was optimized against the other variation. And so being able to tell between the two builds and adjusting properly still is probably the most important thing in the first 10 to 12 minutes in PvT.
Or, you know, just Blinkstalkering all enemies and killing them before they get there. But, you know.
Yeah, that works too.
Zerg has this to the Marine King build. Okay, it'll be alright, Teo. You're not gonna explode. I hope. So Zerg has this too quite a bit. You know, players will choose what order they specifically at what time they decide they want to get their Baneling Nest defensively. You get the Baneling Nest too soon, that's gas that you had that you spent on something else other than what else you could have been researching or upgrading. Maybe it delayed your lair a little bit. People decide when to get which upgrades, etc. The gas timings for Zerg are very key.
A big part of it is upgrades versus lair, and what time you take your third base for Zerg. That's a large part of how they're teching and spending their money. Especially like you can do upgrades into a lair, and you have a little bit of a later mid-game timing, but it's stronger because it has the upgrades. Or you can do lair into the upgrades, which pushes your timing back a little bit further. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Just very, very important to make sure you're very careful in the order at which you do things. Because if you do things in an incorrect or inferior order, you can often just die. I remember watching a game where Huck accidentally skipped Warp Gate or accidentally canceled Warp Gate and then started it late. He actually had an extra Phoenix out in his build because of the extra 50 gas, and he hadn't noticed that he had canceled Warp Gate by accident. But then he noticed it a little later, started again, but he died. He didn't have he didn't have the ability to bruise gateway units when the attack came.
It's kind of
Yeah,
important.
well, Warp Gate is kind of useful, yes.
Warp Gate is it's a little bit useful. It's you can try to rush Colossus out, but if you don't make enough gateway units, your three Colossus aren't really gonna do much of anything, right?
Right.
It's you got to make sure you do things in the correct order, relative to what your opponent's doing. You gotta make sure you're scouting, you're paying attention to what he's doing, and you can certainly tweak the order of things as appropriate on a regular basis. And that's really how you tell the difference between a good and a great player, is when a great player makes small changes in timings of tech,
Yes. Yeah.
in order to optimize a build significantly and gain a much bigger advantage than they otherwise would have.
Yeah, 91 does this all the time. Like, if you watch his
Oh yeah.
builds, they are obscenely optimized. It's glorious. It's so crazy. Like, when you actually try to copy his builds and you nail the chrono boost timings and everything lines up perfectly, it's the greatest feeling on earth.
Yeah, do you remember the Parting
But
Soul
it's really
Trains?
hard. Of course, I remember Parting Soul Trains.
How everyone would be doing Soul Train. For a while there, every Protoss player on Earth was doing a Soul Train, and no one was coming even close to half of Parting's win rate with the strategy. Parting
Yeah,
would just
because
tell his
and they all
opponent.
moved out. Yeah, and they all moved out 30 seconds after Parting.
And with the same number of units Parting had, and everybody sitting here going, how the hell does
Yeah.
he have the same. How the hell is he 30 seconds faster than every other player on Earth? And no one could figure it out. His timings and his decisions were just so crisp.
Well, you want to
It
know the
was just
secret?
incredible.
The secret is staggered gases. That's the secret.
He also had really greedy openings. Like, he would go blind
Too.
Nexus first all the time
That shit
on
too,
four blue caps.
yeah.
Like, that makes such a massive difference, going Nexus first and not scouting until after you've gotten your wall up.
All right,
Like,
so
it's.
yeah,
Yeah, that
it's
alone is
pretty
like
incredible.
a 15-second gain.
Yeah, and then you either die, and then you either die or you hit your soul train 30 seconds sooner. So when should you tech instead of building units or economy? What is teching the appropriate decision?
That's way too complex to answer. It goes from matchup to matchup. It changes with the metagame. It changes with the maps. Like, I think it's way too generic a question.
I
But
think,
I guess
yeah,
generally,
very much.
when you don't need units early on, or you don't need units anytime soon for whatever reason. So, for example, if you know for sure your opponent is doing something that isn't going to be aggressive in the next however many minutes, then you can tech. You can choose to do that, and it's fine. But it's really hard. It's a really hard question to answer.
I can think of a circumstance that would always be good to tech, and that's if you're ever behind. Say, for instance, your opponent runs in with Hellions, kills off 20 workers or whatever. You don't have the ability, like, you don't have any more economy. You can't expand. You have to rebuild your economy. You don't have the economy to build more units unless you happen to already have, like, a gigantic army, and then you can base race or something weird. So all that's really left to you is to just turtle and tech and hope that you can make it to, the next 5, 10 minutes in the game, and survive until you can get up a third base or attack or whatever.
Yeah,
Or
a
other
long
things,
time
of
ago.
course, for Protoss.
It really depends. It really depends. I remember a long time ago talking to QXC about his I don't know if he's changed his opinion on this, but he used to when he fell behind a fair bit, he would decide that he wanted to win the game in the next couple of minutes or so, because otherwise he would fall too far behind and he wouldn't be able to play catch up. So he needed to do a lot of damage. So he would start plus one weapons upgrades immediately. To coincide with a timing, and then he would just make a lot of units, and he would say, okay, here's my timing, here's my window to try to play catch up. If I miss this window, I've already lost anyway. I'm this far behind. Let me use tech to try, let me try to get an important tech upgrade quickly to try to make up the difference a bit. You know, tech is, as a general rule of thumb, you should tech any time that you feel that you can survive long enough for your tech to kick in. So that's the first metric. Do you think you'll live long enough for the tech to kick in? And second of all, is your current level of tech insufficient? I guess is the second question. In TVP, for example, typically played in Heart of the Swarm, Protoss will take their second base and will start going for Colossus. And Terran will kind of poke and prod, but they won't really do much until medevacs are out. Terran has to wait for the medevacs. And they have to wait for medevacs because the mothership core's defensive capabilities is so strong that, well, without your units healing, you're not getting much done. But especially with force fields. But then your medevacs come out, and then suddenly Protoss's tech is totally insufficient. Without AoE damage, you can't kill a bio army with medevac support. So Protoss has to decide to tech. It just so happens that those teching decisions are preemptive before the situation gets really bad because they know how it's going to play out.
There is a difference between deciding to tech, because you're in a game, you say, well, now I have to go Dark Shrine or Storm or whatever, and just having a build that you know, like that kind of defines a matchup, like three base Blink in PvZ or Blink Colossus in PvT or whatever. I think those are two separate things, because in one case there is a decision, in the other you just always do it because that's how the matchup works.
Yeah,
If that
but
makes any
you're
sense.
still making that decision based off of the conditions within the game. Like if a
Yeah,
year
but
from now
I
the meta
mean,
changes completely and all Protoss are opening up like two base Blink Stalker into like Dark Templar drops or something in
dear God, I
PvT.
hope that's the case.
Like say that's like the
If Dark
standard in
Templar drops,
PvT.
if Dark Templar drops ever become sufficiently viable to be a standard, oh my God, everyone is going to be so outrageously miserable.
Like if that's the if like in a year that's the standard, that's not because that's just how the matchup works. That's because something like definitely changed within the matchup that actually became the better tech choices to pick.
I mean, you can sort of, but I don't know, with how Heart of the Swarm slash Wings of Liberty have always worked, that's not the case. Like, you do two base AoE in or a two base all in like 99% of PBTs.
I'm just trying to say that there is like some, I think there is some logic or reason behind it other than like, oh, that's just how it's always been.
Chris is correct. I mean, it has always been that way, specifically because it has to be that way because that's the way it's designed. But I mean, there is a reason behind the re why people do that other than just, well, I do this because I do.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, there is no decision. It's how the matchup works. Protoss gets AoE.
Well, I mean, no,
It's
I mean,
different. It's different from choosing when to go Storm. Being like, okay, I just held the medevac timing and I killed two medevacs. I can go three Colossi and cut there and get Storm a bit quicker because I'm a little bit ahead or whatever. That's a different kind of decision.
well, I mean, there are
And
other
it's
things you can
still a
do.
decision regarding when to tech.
Imagine that say I don't want to play an AoE game. I can choose to do it all in before then and go with a different tech style. I could, do an immortal bunker bust with force fields and try to kill him before he even has medevacs out. I mean, there's no set rule that the matchup has to be played with AoE. It's just if you're playing a macro game, you kind of wind up needing it because you die if you don't have it, but you can avoid a macro game.
Oh yeah,
But
I don't know, in my mind, deciding when to tech to something and deciding whether you are going to all in or not is not necessarily the same kind of decision. I'm probably not explaining myself very well, but like you kind of, if you're gonna all in, you decide that on the loading screen, more or less. Like, as Protoss, let's be honest, we don't say, I think he's weak, I'm gonna all in. The game starts and you're like, I'm a 7k, this guy. Let's be honest. That's a different kind of decision.
Okay, so you're talking about like deviations within game versus like pre-planned strategies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
And how you attack.
Well, I'm actually not making a. I actually don't like the distinction between the two of them. Because, I mean, a deviation in game is something you react to, obviously, due to a situation getting out of your control. But, yeah, I mean, the decision making process behind when you should do something should be basically the same in and out of the game. You know, deciding in advance. There should be a general criteria or metric to decide, you know, when is it good to tech, when is it not. And I mean, it is very vague in general. When you're applying that to a, you know, kind of an overarching strategy before the game starts, unless you're planning a very specific timing, like Teo mentioned. But
Yeah.
I mean, it still exists. It's just harder to really measure appropriately.
Yeah, so we're basically saying the same thing in two different ways.
Right, yeah.
More
I
or
mean, if
less.
I'm in the middle of a game, and there will be times when I'm playing Protoss, for example, or I'm playing Zergaterran, whereby I fall behind. It's like, well, I'm not going to tech any further. Time to just all in, make as many units as I can, and hope I catch him off guard. Because the amount of times an opponent will get an advantage early, an economy put you behind, and then will play greedy from there for some reason is just beyond reason. I've lost track of the amount of times an opponent will have me dead, and then will decide to expand twice instead of trying to kill finish me off, and I'll just kill him with units. So I mean, obviously there will be times. I've had a situation before where I've been floating a lot of gas, because I've just haven't been able to take the time to really tech hard as I had planned to, due to something throwing me off. So I have like way fewer minerals and way more gas than expected. So I'll throw it into Templar Archives and try to do an Archon bust or something. And as an example of, you know, spending a little bit of time to tech now for something that to end the game in the next minute or so, especially since heavy Archon builds are not a long-term viable play.
Nope.
So, yeah, I mean, in that sense, you know, generally tech is something you choose a. Basically, generally speaking, you should tech when you think you're going to survive for the tech to finish, and you want a power swing at a specific timing. I think it's generally a. Go ahead.
Or you just kind of want that tech eventually, so you might as well get it sooner rather than later, if that makes any sense. For example, in Wings of Liberty, there used to be this build, which was pretty much a two-base blink into third base, where you would go four gate, blink plus two robo, then take a third. And blink completed, but it didn't necessarily coincide with a power spike in your build. You just kind of got it, and then you got a quick plus three, and then you went for your timing. So your plus two blink kind of set up an extra step.
Yeah, those builds have tended to
So
fade
yeah,
away,
like,
though, in favor of ones that are more efficient.
it's not that it isn't efficient. Like, it's the best way to get a quick plus. That build is, well, it's pretty much the Wings of Liberty version of the standard now, and it's kind of like, it was the best way to get a quick plus three. What I'm trying to say is, in that case, you use your tech, which was plus two, to get and blink while you were at it, because you kind of need blink anyway, to set up another tech step, I guess. But that's
Yeah, I'll
similar
agree with that.
situation.
I mean, that wasn't a specific. I mean, that's more of like a long string of techs with like an
Yeah.
ultimate goal at the end. And it just so happened that that was like the best order in which to do that in. And you were kind of like going three steps of tech rather than just one.
Yeah. Which is what
Because it's like.
happens with a lot of builds that kind of set up a strong mid to late game timing. Like, you have different layers of tech, and then when everything needs to line up properly eventually later on, you have a strong like the later your timing goes, the more layers you need, the more stepping stones you need.
Okay.
Which also makes the builds harder to execute.
Right. So why don't we talk a little bit about the impact of economy on tech choices?
Okay.
Since we brought that up a little bit. So in Legacy of the Void, for example, your bases mine out faster. They just do. So I mean, there's a situation whereby you are required to expand more rapidly. That sort of insinuates that you have less time to tech, right?
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you make a bunch, if you have to make units in order to cover all the bases you're trying to take, you can't really afford to just have to be teching nonstop and not making those units. You don't have enough income to expand tech and have an army at the same time.
Right.
I think it's actually really interesting how legacy kind of made us think that tech is really tied to the economic model you use. I personally never thought of tech being so tied to how many starting workers you had and how the mines, the bases mined out before the legacy beta. Then I played it for a bit and I was like, oh, this is why it feels so different. And
yeah, I mean, you can't really, it's a lot, you have to be a lot more careful and focused on what tech choices you make. Because you can't afford to be as general with your tech. And that really puts sort of an emphasis on units that are more heavily front-loaded. And what I mean by that is that units that are reasonably not too difficult to gain access to and have most of their functionality unlocked right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Cyclone, for example.
Yeah.
In the recent patch notes, the Cyclone attacks air and ground again, right off the bat, without special upgrades or anything. And it's fast, it's powerful in small numbers, you don't need a lot of them, and it's not really too difficult to get one out. They're reasonably early, you can get access to them. It doesn't take a lot of time to get this unit out, and it's pretty powerful. It's very powerful tech. It's not good endgame tech. If you try to have a maxed army of 200 supply Cyclones up against, you know, an optimal army, you're just going to get crushed, right?
I don't know. Have you ever seen a 200 supply of Sentries?
Never.
of Sentries.
Sentries are pretty damn good when you have 100 of them, right?
I remember playing 3v3s with the two of you, and I went mass Sentry. All right, and I killed some guy with who was going mass Void Rage, if you recall.
Yeah.
I remember Bisu trying to go mass Sentry and failing horribly.
Poor Bisu. Yep.
But I mean, yeah, obviously. But I mean, someone's got a max endgame army, you know, a 200 supply of Cyclones, even with their upgrades, is not going to go very well.
Mm-hmm.
The unit is, you know, the scalability of the unit and the way the unit functions is it's very strong early on when it's first unlocked, and it's also very mobile. Like extremely mobile, and it doesn't take a lot of additional tech to make the unit useful at that point. I mean, it's just useful to have out. Period.
Right.
When you don't have a lot of time to tech, it sort of puts the emphasis on that type of unit, units that are very powerful when they're first unlocked and don't need a lot of extra time and babysitting to get good. So that's why in large part the Adept is so powerful right now in Legacy of the Void compared to the Zealot, because until you have charged on the Zealot, can't compete.
Mm-hmm.
It's also why so many people are discussing the Zerg's researching drops.
Right.
Because if Zerg has to wait until Lair to get drops isn't remotely as useful because it comes out too late.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any reason, honestly, to have drops at the same tech level as Nidus, because it is different. Yeah. It's different economic investments in terms of, like, gas, things like that, but it is... Like, I think drops are just inferior. I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like, for instance, like, if we talk about tech being locking away powerful things, it doesn't make sense to unlock two things where one is much more powerful than the other. It makes no sense to keep those at the same tech level.
Well, it depends on the resource investment as well. I mean, Nidus aren't a much more... Niduses don't involve much more resources than drops do, so I still agree with your point. Mm-hmm. But imagine for a second that a Nidus costs 10 times as much as drops. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It could still be way more powerful, and there'd still be reason for them to be at the same tech level.
Maybe.
There's more element there as well, but...
I don't know. It's still hard to tell just because of the way that Zerg functions. Like, if you drop four units, like, who the fuck cares? Unless maybe they're...
They Ultralisks?
No.
is this catch doing Ultralisk drop harass?
Kawhi Rice used to do that as well.
I mean, a four lurker drop can be absolutely devastating.
I guess I forgot about lurkers. Lurkers are really good now.
Yep.
He drops four lurkers into or four Banelings drop into your mineral line is...
Yeah, that's true. Banelings
are
pretty strong.
I remember when Zergs were doing that in BBZ and I hadn't learned that the minimap was a thing yet. I fucking hated BBZ.
Like, you just looked down and suddenly realized you were out of money and had no workers, and you're like, what happened?
Yeah. And that is when I learned to 7-gate.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the real reason Teo hates Zerg.
No, it's not the real reason. That was just amusing.
But, I mean, yeah, it's just, there's sort of this emphasis being put on when in the economy, when resources become more and more scarce, the emphasis gets put on units that are, gets put almost entirely on units that are cost efficient for the time. And it's hard to, it's sometimes difficult to think of time as a cost. But time investment is very, very important. So you want it to be, you know, resource efficient, which the Cyclone is very resource efficient, at least in the early game. And you want it to be time efficient. You don't want to have to take too long to get the unit online to really get someplace useful with it. So the Cyclone is in fact, at least in TVP, you know, is the king of the early game right now. Unless your opponent is doing something like a Phoenix opener, and trying to catch your Cyclones as soon as they come out of the base, it's Cyclones dominate the early game. But you know, once you get past the initial possible adept, like proxy two gate rush type stuff. You know, and that's also why I mentioned earlier that the adept completely annihilates the zealot in terms of usefulness, because the adept right out of the gate is much more useful than the zealot until the zealot has charge, but it takes a really long time to get charge.
Yeah.
Especially because when you mass adapt with Blink Stalkers in PvT Legacy of the Void, when are you going to get charged? You're going to get the other two upgrades first.
Yeah. I'm hoping that with the new changes they made, that maybe that'll change given some more time and practice in the beta, making adepts armored.
We'll see.
But, you know, we'll have to see. Zerg to a certain extent has this too. A lot of Zerg players are not bothering with Hydralisks very much anymore, and are just getting Ravagers.
I can see that.
Because you don't, unless you're going into a longer game and you need a large number of them, in smaller numbers, Ravagers are better than Hydralisks in smaller numbers. It's not until like you start getting out to like really big armies that you want like a lot of Hydras in there.
Hydras are terrible in small numbers anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, you could just instead of bothering to unlock Hydralisk tech, you can just make a few Ravagers.
Yep. It's really interesting and really weird, and I have no idea how they're going to balance everything. I think we'll have like a 2 or 3 months of Legacy after beta where there will be lots of balance changes, because it's going to be a massive clusterfuck just because of the economic model. It's actually a good thing that they mentioned that they're releasing in November, which is in the off season, so they have like 2 or 3 months until WCS to fix their shit.
Wait, they're releasing in November?
Yeah, they announced it.
Yeah, they've announced a release date.
Yeah, that's gonna be a disaster.
I think it's the best moment to release, because the off season is going to be essentially an extended beta to get the balance right. I don't think they can get the balance right in 2 months, especially because no one who's actually skilled is playing a lot of Legacy, as far as I know. No one has
switched
yet.
They're still playing Heart of the Swarm.
Yep.
So, I mean, there are some skill players who are playing it a bit, but no one's really, like, super dedicated or focused on it yet. All right, so we wanted to do a bit of a shorter episode this week, so we tried to keep it simple and kind of focused. If there are any questions, I guess we can start taking those now. If not, I have to go take some more very, very powerful painkillers in a few minutes because, well, surgery recovery.
Fun.
Let
me tell you a story about an elephant that got shot.
That's not.
Just kidding.
inside jokes. Okay.
All right.
So we'll just take a minute here for the chat to see if they want to have any questions to ask us.
All right. Let me just ask you two a general question while we're waiting. If there's anything in StarCraft II that you think could be hid behind more tech or removed a tech requirement, what would you do and why? Does that make sense?
I understand the question. I just got to think about it.
Okay.
I know the answer.
All right.
Because I'm biased. I don't like Dark Shrines and Templar Archives being separate in Legacy. I think they should be from the same building.
Why?
Because as we talked so far until now, especially in Legacy, it takes forever to tech to something, and it's really hard. So when you separate the two buildings, you make it so that it's even harder to reach something. Like, going DTs is kind of not realistic.
Hmm.
And I think, I don't think that works particularly well.
Okay.
It's already not easy to tech to stuff if you also have to arbitrarily separate buildings to slow things down. In an economy where everything is faster, I think you just kind of remove options and stuff. I would like it if Blizzard tried merging the two.
Okay.
And it makes sense because Legacy really emphasizes gateway units for Protoss. So we're going to go to Twilight plus Templar Archives a lot, I imagine.
Right.
Okay. So I agree with that notion because it's so difficult to actually try to get Dark Templar out. And Dark Templar are kind of binary, generally speaking, if you get them early.
Yeah.
They either like do tremendous damage or they do nothing. And if they do nothing, you lose immediately because of how expensive they are. And the tech is expensive and takes a long time. So generally, Dark Templar don't see play very much at all, unless you're all-inning or cheesing with them. And I feel like Dark Templar should be something that you do as a harass and not an all-in. Like, it shouldn't just be like, I make this unit, hopefully this wins me the game outright type deal. So it'd be nice to make that a little bit easier to go, so it's a little bit less risky to try it. Especially given how easy detection is to get now.
And Protoss already has enough options of, I do thing X and I hope it works and it's all-in.
Yeah, it would
be nice to have something that can transition a little bit better. I mean, I guess oracles are that, but I think DTs, if you do like a super heavy gateway build, DTs work better than complemented better than oracles. So,
yeah, I don't know what tech stuff I would switch really necessarily. I'm trying to think of the other races, not Protoss, what I would want to change. And it's really difficult. I can't think of anything that exists in its current incarnation that I would want to just delay or make available easier. At the moment, I would rather just change the way things function.
Well, I think
so. I don't.
The cyclone that you pointed out makes sense. Go back to, like, I'm not right, sure the cyclone does... actually needs to attack air that early.
I think it does, and I think that's the problem with the unit design.
Okay.
Is that the unit design isn't very useful as the game goes on. Period. Maybe they could come up with a better upgrade for it that would make it more useful as the game goes on. But the unit is rooted in mobility as a mech unit in its kiting ability. And mech is designed as a strategy that is immobile. So if you have part of the army that's, you know, relies on kiting and part of the army that relies on not moving, those two groups are not going to work all that well together. Okay. The interaction doesn't they don't fight well in synergy with each other. So the Cyclone winds up falling off by the curve as the game goes on. You kind of just replace him with other units instead. They just changed the one thing I really wanted to change, which was the Liberator upgrade. They just put that back on requiring a research. I don't know any off the top of my head. I don't know that you could change the way the Cyclone's tech works and have the unit as it exists still be useful.
Hmm. I would like to have at least one of the Viper spells be researchable.
Oh yeah, the AoE. Okay, that's a good one. The AoE nuke on the Viper should require an upgrade because that thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's way too powerful.
Oh, okay, yeah. So some questions we have
when
here.
When Zergs figure Donald... out they can go mutas.
Yeah. Is Donald Trump going to fix StarCraft? No, Bernie Sanders will. Feel the burn.
Oh.
Yeah, with the delayed warp in,
basically European, so go.
Yeah, with a delayed warp in, would it be slightly more balanced if they were to combine Darkthrone and Temple Archives? Yeah. I mean, it's not that difficult. It's not generally difficult to scout for Temple Archives. There are usually a lot of hints that it's coming. It's not really something that's too much difficulty for. And generally, the ease of getting detection at this point is simple enough that you don't even need to know for a fact that that type of thing's coming. It's actually very typical for Zerg to just get spore crawlers, even if they don't know what's coming, explicitly when they don't know what's coming, just because.
Yeah.
It's not all that difficult. Yeah.
And same for Terran. It's not unusual for them to get turrets against oracles. I don't know how much of an issue it is for Terran to get quick detection in Legacy of the Void. But
it's not that problematic. You're not with the mules when they were removed for a little while. Like automatically getting detection was difficult. You had to have a good reason for it. But with the mules back in, it's not very hard.
I mean, you have those moments when the Terran lands two mules, and 2 seconds later, an ET walks in, and I start laughing. But otherwise, I think they.
And then a moment later, you realize your opponent's actually playing mech, and he's got 4 ravens, and then you start crying inside.
You should have seen the screenshot of my one of the last games I played against Yoshi, where he did his fucking banshee into mech. And I lost 20 probes, so I DT dropped them, and I killed 50 SCVs, and I won.
That sounds like Yoshi. That sounds like Yoshi.
That sounds beautiful.
Alright, so, why don't you go ahead and tell them, Chris? Because next episode will be a bit longer and more involved. I won't be nearly as drug-addled. Surgery, man. It hurts.
That wraps up our episode for tech. In 2 weeks, we're going to be doing another episode, and we decided we're going to do maps. And we're going to have some map makers on. Are we specifically going to be covering a particular set of maps?
The plan at the moment is to talk about the ladder maps for Legacy of the Void.
Okay.
Maybe cover some of the hardest war maps, and then maybe deduce a little bit on the new map pack that was released by the SMA group.
Okay.
Cool. Which you can find over on Team Liquid. There's a new organization of very qualified, very skilled map makers, calling themselves the StarCraft Map Making Association, and they just released their first map pack which you can find on Team Liquid. I'll post a link in the chat here.
All right.
That
wraps up. You guys have any shout-outs or anything?
Yeah, Cantuva / Uventak, the same person. He's the man.
Excellent.
Shout out to him.
All right, and Teo likes Italy and pizza and coffee.
Yeah.
All right.
And astrophysics.
Astrophysics, yeah, we're good.
I guess shout out to the National Astrophysics. What the fuck is it called? I don't know. I work for them. I don't know what they're called. I don't remember the entire name. But shout out to them for letting me do my thesis and stuff, I guess.
All right. I have one shout out to Phantom, who's taught me everything that I know about gaming, and he is just the greatest role model of all time. This is sarcasm. All right. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. See ya.
See ya.
Bye-bye.